Наш отаман Гамалія, отаман завзятий, зібрав хлопців та й поїхав по морю гуляти. Зібрав хлопців та й поїхав по морю гуляти.
Наш отаман Гамалія, отаман завзяти.
Hey!
Зібрав хлопців та й поїхав по морю гуляти. Зібрав хлопців та й поїхав по морю. Крикнув Гамалія,
братці, будем жити, гей!
Будем жити, не тужити, я не чарапини. Будем жити, не тужити, я не чарапини.
Гамалія, Гамалія, наш отаман Гамалія, Гамалія, Гамалія.
Та й поїхав по морю гуляти.
Зібрав хлопців та й поїхав по морю гуляти.
Hey!
And a contemporary group from Ukraine called Fort with a story of Hamalia, that is a Ukrainian Cossack of old, and the lyrics were actually composed by none other than Ukraine's national bard, Taras Shevchenko. Вітаю вас всіх, дорогі радіослухачі, на радіопередачу «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння по мережі PCJ Radio, яка подається вам англійською мовою з Британської Колумбії в Канаді. З вами Павліна Макварі, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Hello there and welcome to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, coming to you from Vancouver Island on the west coast of Canada, courtesy PCJ Radio International. I'm your host, Paulette Demchik-McCory, Pukadinska Pavlina, and I'm delighted to have you with me. We've got a great program lined up for you. We will be focusing on kind of two themes. One of them is a new discovery that we made here at Nash Holos, and it is part of the Ukrainian Jewish Heritage feature, an interesting society in New York City that is bringing to light tragic historic events in Ukraine's past dating back a century. As well, we'll be focusing on national bard Taras Shevchenko, a little story, also kind of on a theme of America, and that'll be the story of the friendship between Taras Shevchenko and a well-known American contemporary of his time. So stay tuned for all of that. We've also got our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music. And coming up next is an American duo, and this is going back in the archives a little ways. They are called Malveth from back in about the 1980s. Here they are with a delightful song called Serce Smieється, My Heart is Smiling.
Shabba-dabba-da, shabba-dabba-da. Shabba-dabba-da, shabba-dabba-da. Серце сміється, радісні дні, музика ж.
і прийдеш до мене, як сонце засне, пригорнеш до себе, і місяць моргне, і зорі забудуй, на небі миготи, коли ти зі мною замріяний світ. Шабра-бра, шабра-бра. Прийдеш, поцілуєш, щоб соловей все знав, щоб музику щастя по світі кував. Серце сміється, радісні дні, музика щастя.
By Michael Alpert and Julian Catasti from an album called Night Songs from a Neighboring Village. And it is a medley of Yiddish and Ukrainian folk songs. And now I don't speak Yiddish, but it's sounds like Siz Gekimen. And the Ukrainian song was Ususida Khatabila. And that translates as The Neighbor Has a White House.
Ви слухайте радіопрограму «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння по мережі PCJ Radio, яка подається вам англійською мовою з Британської Колумбії в Канаді. You're listening to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio, coming to you on the PCJ Radio Network from Vancouver Island in beautiful British Columbia, Canada. And now for a look at Ukraine's rich Jewish heritage, then and now, brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter based in Toronto, Ontario. Now, Ukrainian Jewish Heritage is a series that has been ongoing here at Nash Holos for several years now. It's sponsored by Ukrainian Jewish Encounter of Toronto. The series, for me and also I hope for Nash Holos listeners, has opened a window into the fascinating centuries-old yet little-known history of Jewish life in Ukraine. It has also presented opportunities for dialogue between people of Ukrainian and Jewish descent who are working to make this history better known. Now, speaking to that, I recently received an email from Allison Zivin of the Felshtin Society in New York. The Felshtin Society is named after a Ukrainian town called Felshtin, which today is called Vardiske. It began as a benevolent society organized in 1905 in New York City. And after a brutal pogrom in February of 1919 in Ukraine, in which some 600 Jewish people in Felshtin were massacred, the society provided refuge and relief to the survivors. 100 years later, the Felshtin Society is still active and is planning commemorative events to mark the centenary of this tragic historical event. On the line to tell us more about them, the society, and the history behind it is the president of the Felshtin Society, Alan Bernstein. Alan, welcome to Nash Holos.
Thanks very much, Paulina.
It's great to have you, and it's great to find out about this story and about your society. No idea that about it. So tell us just a little bit about the background of the Felshtin Society.
The Felshtin Society was begun in 1905, and it was known as a Landsmannschaften organization, which was formed to provide fraternal and other support to people who came from Ukraine, from this part of the Ukraine, and they got together as a group of neighbors and a group of family and other connections, business connections, and formed organizations to help themselves manage in the new world and also to have the opportunity to purchase burial plots. Because there were no cemeteries available to many of the immigrants that came from Eastern Europe at that time. So there were many reasons why these societies were formed, but those are the primary goals.
And so in 1919, when these horrible pogroms started, this was an added service that the society provided.
Yes, there were additional things. Once the pogroms occurred, many of the people who were part of the society at that time became very active in providing relief to the people who had survived the pogrom. They were very active in establishing orphanages for the children who were left without parents in a variety of different places in Eastern Europe and in Preskurov, town that is now called Khmelnytsky, and other places where there were groups of children that were left alone. So there was a tremendous amount of relief effort that got carried on after 1919 by our society, as well as many others that were formed from the towns, from the many other towns, more than 1,200 towns that were affected by these events.
Yeah, and they were horrific events. I mean, a lot of people got killed, and the world doesn't know about this that much. And so, you know, it's good. Allison was telling me that, you know, your society is working to commemorate this event because it's a century coming up, you know, the centenary coming up next year with events. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what the events that are coming up?
Well, it's true that these events are not as popularly discussed as the Holocaust and as the Armenian genocide and many of the other terrible things that unfortunately man does to man. So we have decided several years ago, about 6 years ago, we started working on this and thinking that the 100th anniversary of the pogrom was an important date that we should memorialize and try to use as an opportunity to shine some light on these events in history, not only for our town, but for the more than 1,200 other towns that were affected by these events and the more than 200,000 people that were slaughtered in these years.
Yeah.
Because these events did take place over a period of several years. So in our thinking about it, we decided that we, as we have done, we decided that we wanted to have a major event, a day-long conference-type event that would provide people with an opportunity to hear about the history or the historical context in which these pogroms took place. We're going to talk about the concept of the intergenerational transmission of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to also present information about Jewish genealogy and having an opportunity for people to talk about how to establish family trees. Because when people go through these kinds of horrible situations, often family history and family roots are terribly disrupted. So mm-hmm. part of our, what we feel our mission is to try to help people reconnect with their roots, to try to find their way toward rediscovering their ancestors and having a better sense of where they came from, because many people have really not given adequate attention, in my opinion, to really where they came from. It never fails to amaze me that practically whoever I run into in New York, I live in New York, so practically whoever I run into in New York and I tell them about our society or I talk to them about what our plans are for the centennial event, they say, oh, you know what, I have a relative who came from there. Or my husband has people who came from a town. And I asked them what the town was, and they say they don't know.
Oh.
They don't. So it's something that we really took to heart and began to take very seriously. And since we had a group that was relatively intact, because we have 250 members in our society, we felt it was important for us to be able to help other groups reconnect in the way that we were reconnecting with our past.
Well, that's certainly an admirable thing to do, because people don't know about this, and even, you know, descendants don't know about this. And, you know, really, I think I had a vague recollection, and probably most people do, from Fiddler on the Roof, right? The story of, you know, of that shtetl and people leaving it because of the pogrom, and it wasn't just people coming in and, you know, smashing up their home. It was actual wholesale slaughter, and it happened in more than one village. And there are no more shtetls really in Ukraine, are there? I mean, Felshtin really is kind of the story of the disappearance and, well, extinction really of the shtetl in Ukraine, isn't it?
Well, we went back to the town in 2010 because our group erected a monument both for the victims of the pogrom and for the victims of the Holocaust, because as it turned out, although there were 600 of our people slaughtered in 1919, when the Nazis came in and the Holocaust took place, they unfortunately slaughtered the rest of the Jews that were living in the town at that time.
Yeah.
So there were two purposes, and we have a monument that's now standing that both pays tribute to the people who were killed in the pogrom as well as the people who were killed in the Holocaust. So the town itself is a rural town. It's a farming town. People are still using horses and buggies, mm-hmm. and it's probably still very much like it was in many respects 100 years ago, probably with a few light bulbs and TVs.
Mm-hmm.
But the town and its character still remain relatively intact, but certainly without the Jewish element.
Yeah.
There are no Jews in that particular town.
That's just so tragic, because it mean probably the history would have gone back centuries.
Yes,
yeah.
That's very true.
Yeah. So you've got this commemorative event, like a full-day conference coming up, and Allison also mentioned that you have another program called Who Will Light a Candle? What's that all about?
Well, we have, we're a very small group. I'd say our labor capacity is very limited,
mm-hmm.
but we had this idea that one of the things that would really offer us an opportunity to expose people to this idea and the ideas these events in the past, one of the things that we thought was a good idea would be if we could get people involved in lighting candles.
Mm.
So as part of our centennial memorial, we are asking people anywhere, really, and of any persuasion, really, to light a candle for one of the people who died. And we're hoping to be able to have 200,000 candles lit, one for each of the people that died. That was that was one of the ideas that we had. We're also asking, we're also in the process of reaching out to all the synagogues in the United States and Canada, actually, if we could get to it. But as I indicated, our labor pool is relatively limited, so we're doing the best we can. But we hope to contact every synagogue in the United States and help them understand that we think it's important that they reach out to their congregants and find out who among their congregants might be connected to these events in history, and how they might be able to establish a day of mourning in their synagogue, so that those people who do have family and that came from that part of the world and who may have suffered would have an opportunity to say the Jewish prayer for the dead, which is the Kaddish, and then hopefully also light a candle. In addition, we're also beginning to mount an effort to have a national day of remembrance that we will either work through the government or we'll work through actually trying to reach out to the Ukrainian government as well. That we could have a national day of remembrance that would gain some attention publicly. Whole idea is that we would like very much to acknowledge these events. We'd like very much to for people to become aware of these events that took place, to remember the people who perished, and to try to shine a light of sanity in a world where it doesn't seem like the value of human life is increasing. It seems to be more and more that, you know, with the tide turning against immigrants, and now we have a world of 65 million immigrants, and what's going to happen to those people? You know, so much of what we were able to benefit from, because our families were welcomed and our families had families who were here and could support them and provide jobs and housing and things like that. And, you know, those opportunities seem to be in much less favor than they have been.
It does, yeah. Humanity does tend to peak and valley, doesn't it? Yeah.
Well, yes.
Well, let's hope that it improves and that what you're doing will help to make people think as well as remember and apply lessons of the past to the present so that there's a better future for everyone. The day that you will be lighting the candle and the day of the National Day of Remembrance, will that be the same day by any chance? And what day on the calendar is it?
You know, Paulina, it's an interesting question, and some people have brought it up to us because these events took place over time. They took place over years. So the February 16th, 2019 is the date for Felstein.
Okay, gotcha.
But for instance, our neighboring town, which is Praskurov, it's now, as I said, it's now called Khmelnytsky.
Right.
That pogrom took place 3 days earlier.
Okay.
So according to Jewish law, it's supposed to be on a particular day, and we don't want to dictate that it should just be on February 16th. We're hoping that the synagogues will recognize and help their congregants discover their roots and pick the date that they feel is most comfortable for them in the individual synagogues that we're reaching out to establish a day of mourning. In terms of a national day, we're open. You know, we feel that, you know, whatever day we can get, you know, established would be fine because, as I said, there's such a broad range of dates in which these events took place. So it really, you know, we're really not we're not quibbling over details in this.
Sure.
Whatever date they assign us, we're happy to take.
Okay. Yeah, with the government generally you are.
Exactly. There you go. I figure that's pretty realistic.
Yeah. So then, just to clarify then, the 200,000 candles that you would like lit, would that be on one day or spread out then?
You know, we're happy to get the 200,000 candles lit. According to Jewish tradition, it should be on the day that people perished. People passed away. It should be on those days. So, as I said, somebody from Praskurov would light a candle on February 12th.
Right.
We're going to do it on February 16th. We're also not going to quibble over details on that as well.
Okay.
The idea is to inspire people to remember those who perished, and to hold their memories in their hearts for that day. And we're really not concerned about which day it is.
Okay. What do you recommend then for people that aren't Jewish or didn't have relatives who perished but would like to light a candle in solidarity? What do you have, any suggestions or requests?
Yes, we're happy to have them join us at the Felstein Society and light their candles on February 16th.
Okay.
That would be wonderful, and we're hoping that people of all faiths and all walks of life would be joining us and sending us their support and contacting their clergy people and helping their clergy people understand the significance of this and why they would like to, as congregants of any faith, to participate in this.
Indeed, yeah. Nice. So at any time of day? Of the day on the
16th. In the evening, generally his candles are lit in the evening.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Typically, what a Yahrzeit candle, which is what the Jewish name for a memorial candle, is a 24-hour candle, and it's lit in the evening. And it's set at sundown, basically, the prayer is said, and that's when the candle is lit.
Okay, so for those who don't know the prayer, just, I guess, any prayer, I suppose.
Any prayer will do.
Yeah.
Any prayer will do.
Well, that's great. Well, we're unfortunately running out of time. There's so many more questions I wanted to ask you about the Felstein Society, but there was one thing, the survivors of Felstein massacres started to record their experiences into a book. Tell us about the Yizkor book.
After the pogroms and after the society had a chance to deal with the horrors that they could, in fact, deal with the orphanages and the emergency relief and bringing people to the United States from the Ukraine. After all that subsided, the society got together and they decided that they would like to record what took place. And the method that they came up with was that everybody who had an experience should write a chapter, and they'll put all the chapters together in a book.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1937, which was when the book was published, at that time there was something called the WPA, the Works Progress Administration.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a government agency that was formed during the Depression to provide grants to people to do a variety of different things. In many cases, they did wonderful artwork, and in other cases, they did other things. But the one thing that we got was a grant from the WPA to write a Yizkor book. And the book consists of three parts. It tells stories about the town, about the shtetl, and then it tells stories about the horrors of the pogrom. And there were a lot of eyewitness accounts, people who barely escaped with their lives, people who have a lot of stories about who didn't escape and who was a victim. And then there are many stories about what happened when people got to the United States and how they established themselves and how the society functioned and how different kinds of internal political debates in the society itself. It was a kind of a history of the society. That book was published in 1937. We're just in the process of a final revision of the translation that was done about 10 years ago. And we're ready to publish it probably by the end of the year. We'll have it published in a new form and with new binding. It'll be a beautiful new publication.
Wow, and that will be really useful for anybody. It will actually be a window back in time because it was written so long ago, so, you know, when memories were fresh. And I think it'll be quite an eye-opener for anybody that wants to read it. So where can people find out more? You have a website, so tell us where people can find you and what's on your website.
we have a website. Our website is www.felshtin.org. That's F-E-L-S-H-T-I-N.org. We have a lot of things on the website. We have bibliographical material. We have biographical material. We have names of people who perished in the pogrom. We have a whole series of interviews that we've done, oral histories of people who have who are first-generation Americans who have seen their families evolve from their parents who were immigrants to the present day, and we've got about six or seven different oral histories that depict what it took for these families to make it in the United States. And it's just chock full of all the historical documents that we could get our hands on at this time. A lot of first-person stories that aren't in the book are a lot of news articles about Felshtin and about the things that happened subsequent to the pogroms and up into recent times when we've had the opportunity to do things that that got published in local newspapers and other periodicals.
And of course,
so it's a very rich, we're very happy with our website. We think it's great.
Yeah, I do too, actually. I visited it, and there's lots of stuff.
Thank you.
I could spend a lot of time there, and I will be doing that. And,
thanks very much.
And so there will be information as well about your upcoming events for anybody that is listening from New York or is planning to visit or would like to actually make a special trip to do that. I mean, the whole concept, one of the things that really fascinates me, Alan, is the intergenerational trauma. And, you know, maybe finally at one point, this is a point in history where we'll look forward. And, you know, I can just imagine all the people that came after all the pogroms, after the world wars, and now as well fleeing from wars. We just expect people to come in and just pick up and, you know, learn our customs and fit into society and carry on as if nothing happened. And there's this incredible psychological and possibly physical damage to these people, and we just kind of just push it under the rug and don't deal with it. And I think it's something that needs to be dealt with. So
I think you're absolutely right, Pauline. I don't think there's any question about it. I think the world is looking at 65 million souls who are currently bereft of homes, jobs, education, children who are hungry. You know, I think it's a major problem for humanity, and I think it's something that we have to face. And we hope that with our, you know, with our little group, kind of a David and Goliath story here, but we hope that with our little group, we can at least shine a little bit of light on what it took for us to establish ourselves and become part of a decent society, and what it will take for the world to set itself straight another 100 years down the road.
We can only hope.
Right.
Well, it was wonderful to have you on the show and to meet up with you, and we'll be bringing more information to our listeners about your events and your society. And in the meantime, people can go to your website and learn more about it and keep up to date. And there, I imagine there will be updates when things are all finalized. So looking forward to that, Alan.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk, Pauline. It's very wonderful that you allowed us to do this, and I think it's terrific, and we're very happy about it.
Great. Well, same here, and thank you again, and we'll talk to you soon.
I'll look forward to it.
Okay.
Be well. Take
care. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we were speaking with Alan Bernstein, president of the Felshtin Society in New York. For more information about the society, its work, and the history of the Jewish community or shtetl in Felshtin, visit their website, www.felshtin.org, and that's spelled F like in Frank, E-L-S-H-T-I-N.org. Ukrainian Jewish Heritage is brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter, based in Toronto, Ontario. To find out more about their work, visit their website and follow them on Facebook and Twitter. Transcripts and audio files of this and earlier broadcasts of Ukrainian Jewish Heritage are available at their website, UkrainianJewishEncounter.org, as well as at the Nash Holos website, www.nashholos.com. a group from Ukraine called Kiev Orchestrio, and that song was called Madalena. Vyslúchajte rádio programu Náš holos, rádio Ukrajinského Koriňa, po mreži PCJ Radio, jaká podiesie vám anglickú mówiu z Britanskou Kolumbii v Kanadi. Hovorit Pavlina. You're listening to Náš holos Ukrainian Roots Radio on PCJ Radio International. I'm your host, Pavlina. Coming up next, back to the Shevchenko theme, since this is March, and that is the month that we honor Shevchenko, since it's the month in which he was born and passed away. Coming up next is a song by contemporary rendition of a song that is the lyrics of his very famous Zapovit, or My Testament, and it is performed by Dmytro Bohush.
Як умру, то поховайте мене на могилі. Серед степу широко на Вкраїні милі. Що плани широко полі і Дніпро і кручі. Було видно, було чути, як реве ревучі. Що плани широко полі і Дніпро і кручі. Було видно, було чути, як реве ревучі. Як понесе з України у синєє море кров ворожу, а той діє і лани, і гори. Все покину і полину до самого Бога. Буду молитися, а до того я не знаю Бога. Все покину і полину до самого Бога. Буду молитися, а до того я не знаю Бога. Поховайте та вставайте, кайдани порвіте. І вражую свою кров'ю волю окропіте. І мене в селі великій, в селі воліної. Не забудьте пом'янути незлим тихим словом. І мене в селі великій, в селі воліної. Не забудьте пом'янути
This is Irina Bell, producer and host of the Ukrainian Hour on Chin Radio in Ottawa, with a Did You Know Chiznalivi segment, and special greetings to the listeners of Nash Holos. Did you know that there was a very special friendship between one of Ukraine's greatest historical figures, Taras Shevchenko, and a famously talented black American, Ira Aldridge? Although both men died in the 1860s, both of their images are present in the capital city of the United States. A mere 2.5 miles apart, in Washington, D.C., stand monuments to Taras Shevchenko and to Ira Aldridge. The first was born a Ukrainian serf, who was purchased out of bondage in order for his immense talents to blossom. The second was born a black in New York, who, because of the color of his skin, had to leave his country to find the full glory of his God-given talent. At the corner of 22nd and P Streets in Northwest Washington stands the figure of Taras Shevchenko. This is a monument to the man, his writing, his profound commentaries on human dignity, pleas of help for the plight of the downtrodden, and his aspirations for his country, struggling under Tsarist repression. On the other side of the city stands the Ira Aldridge Theater on the Howard University campus. Portraits of both men hang in that theater. Portraits painted by Taras Shevchenko and donated to Howard University in 1967 from the archives of the Ukrainian Academy of Arts and Sciences in the United States. Born a serf in Ukraine, Shevchenko was destined for a lifetime of servitude. Yet when his owner left Ukraine for St. Petersburg, Russia, he took the young Shevchenko along. In St. Petersburg, Shevchenko's artistic talents were revealed. In 1838, the city's artistic circles succeeded in purchasing Shevchenko's freedom. Once free, he became a student at the Imperial Academy of Arts, and his artwork and poetic writing flourished. Shevchenko returned to Ukraine in 1845 to find great injustices. His poems criticized the Tsarist regime and chided the aristocracy's oppression of the peasants. For this, he was arrested and deported from Ukraine to exile in a remote part of Russia, and by the decree of the Tsar, denied writing and drawing materials. Despite the Tsar's orders and the incarceration's terrible cost to his health, Shevchenko secretly composed some of his most powerful works while imprisoned and in political exile. But Shevchenko's Ukrainian and Russian friends, including Count and Countess Tolstoy, worked to secure his freedom. Finally, 10 years after his arrest, Shevchenko was released. Forbidden to return to Ukraine, he returned to St. Petersburg, where he met the American Ira Aldridge. Aldridge had been born in New York and found his opportunities limited due to discrimination against blacks. He emigrated to England in 1824 and was soon performing in England's finest theaters. In 1858, Aldridge accepted an invitation from the Russian Imperial Theater to perform in St. Petersburg. Shevchenko attended the opening performance, and the two men were introduced. There are numerous letters and notes commenting upon their meeting and friendship. One of Tolstoy's daughters served as an early translator between Aldridge and Shevchenko, and wrote about the experience and their friendship. Shevchenko attended Aldridge's performances. Aldridge visited Shevchenko's studio and posed for the artist. They visited one another often and spent time in the same social circles, one that included many artists, performers, intellectuals. Their friendship was unique since they had in common not only the creativity of their personalities and their love of the arts, but their shared experiences of social oppression and their dreams of a better future for their people. Though free, famous, with powerful friends, living in the world of Russian aristocracy, neither seemed able to forget his past and the plight of his people. Those who wrote about their friendship noted that they often sang together. Aldridge greatly appreciated the sorrowful and melodic Ukrainian songs that captured the unfortunate plight of the people of Ukraine. Shevchenko, in turn, loved the songs of the Negro South, no doubt to great extent for the same reasons. When Aldridge returned to England, he took with him a portrait of Shevchenko. Aldridge returned to Russia several years later, but by then Shevchenko had passed away. Between 1861 and 1866, Ira Aldridge made several tours of the Tsarist Empire, including 3 trips to Ukraine, to Shevchenko's homeland, trips that had been denied to Shevchenko himself. Both of these men, historic giants in their artistic fields, and in their messages about the struggles of mankind for dignity and the perseverance of individuals, died on foreign soil far from their homelands. Ira Aldridge's body remains in Poland. Eventually, Taras Shevchenko's body was returned to Ukraine from Russia. And their unique friendship remains a story for the ages. This information was excerpted from an article by Robert McConnell and comes from a U.S.-Ukraine Foundation update.
Дуже дякую, Ірино. Many thanks to Ірина Белл of the Ukrainian radio program in Ottawa for sharing Chisnalove, Did You Know, with Nash Holis listeners. You can catch her show at www.chinradioottawa.com.
Дети, веме на край света, як тот вітер в полі літа, ей, в американський край. Лем жаль митя, моя хижа, лем жаль митя, моя хижа, солом'яна жаль. Лем жаль митя, моя хижа, лем жаль митя, моя хижа, солом'яна жаль. Ой, жаль ми вас, вівці сиві, що блека вас без трезиви, ей, які ми варжаль. Хоч бідую не поїду, хоч бідую не поїду в американський край. Хоч бідую не поїду, хоч бідую не поїду в американський край. Жаль митя, моя страна, де живут мамичка з няньою, ей, який ми важаль. То іначе бим поїхав, то іначе бим поїхав в американський край. То іначе бим поїхав, то іначе бим поїхав в американський край. Світа, як тот вітер в полі літа, ей, в американський край. Лем жаль митя, моя хижа, лем жаль митя, моя хижа, солом'яна жаль. Лем жаль митя, моя хижа, лем жаль митя, моя хижа, солом'яна жаль.
And continuing on with that theme of the Ukrainian-American friendship, that was a song by a group called Svita Zare, and it was called Hamaretsky Krai, which translates as America Land. For the very best in Ukrainian programming, tune in to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio in Vancouver every Saturday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time on AM 1320 CHMB and streaming at am1320.com. Live in Nanaimo Wednesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific Time on CHLY 101.7 FM and online at chly.ca. And elsewhere in the world, here on the PCJ Radio Network, on AM, FM, shortwave, and satellite radio. If you miss the live transmissions of any edition of the show, you can find us in between broadcasts at www.nashholos.com for the podcast links to all three editions of the show, as well as other audio features, transcripts, and a link to our Patreon site, where we'll be sharing additional content with patrons of the show. As well, please follow us on Twitter, like the Nash Holos Facebook page, and check out our blog. I love hearing from you, so please send your suggestions, dedications, and requests. Your comments are always welcome. Deja mi vyskinchila nashu programu, pora nam proshchatisya na shchodny tezhden, po vse chasti doma vyskazati do pobachenia. Ale pered tem ya khochu zalishit vas takimi slovami mudrosti. Перше мусиш добре думати і робити, а опісля вже будуть тебе люди хвалити. And our proverb of the week translates as, only through good thought and deed can one secure the praise of others. And with that, we've come to the end of our program. So to wrap things up, we have the By Request Band and the In the Barn Polka. I'm Pavlina. On behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and PCJ Radio, thanks for listening. Until next time, do pobaczenia.